It was in 1866 that a man named Alfred Nobel invented dynamite. He discovered that if you took nitroglycerin and surrounded it with the right kind of material, put it in a stick form, that it could bring great benefit to mankind. Because when he invented dynamite in 1866, patenting it in 1867, they began to use dynamite to clear roads so that more road could be built and roads could be expanded. They would blow up mountains so that trains could go through the mountain, because dynamite would open up places for the train tracks. In fact, they would clear roads so that more tracks could be laid. They would blow up spaces so that buildings could be constructed. It was a great discovery about the power of dynamite and its ability to improve the convenience, the progress, and the livelihood of mankind. But it wasn't too long after that that nations discovered we can use this for war. That the same dynamite that was created to build life and to build society could be used to destroy life and to bomb an enemy. And so dynamite became now used for military purposes and military operations in conflicts. So on the one hand, it could improve life, but on the other hand, it could destroy life. So negatively impacted was Alfred Nobel about the negative use of dynamite that before he died, he bequeathed his vast fortune for the establishment of the Nobel Peace Prize. The Nobel Peace Prize was established because when Alfred Nobel saw that dynamite could be used to hurt, he wanted to leave his legacy of the money he got from creating dynamite for peace. And so the new Nobel Peace Prize was established to award those men and women who had done unique things to bring people together and not blow folk up. Dynamite is very powerful. It can help you and make life better. It can hurt you and ruin your life. You and I have dynamite, and it's in your dentures. Everyone in here has access to dynamite, explosive power that can destroy or that can construct. It's dynamite in your dentures. Your greatest enemy is not in your home. Your greatest enemy is not on your job. Your greatest enemy is in your mouth. Because when you discover about the power and the use and non-use of the tongue, you'll have a whole different view of the muscle in your mouth. Let me write that down. I can make that a title. That 3-inch muscle in your mouth is dynamite in your dentures. In this series, we want to look at something that my mother would tell me, and many of your mothers told you, boy, you better watch your mouth. You better watch your mouth. Sometimes she'd tell me to wash my mouth out with soap. Because there was something about what I was saying or how I was saying it that was unacceptable. Some of us are where we are today because somebody spoke life into us. Some of us are where we are today because somebody has spoken death to us. There are some here today who have not yet recovered from the dynamite blast you were hit with as a child. You're still trying to rebuild what was torn down because of what somebody said. There are others of us who've had new roads, new opportunities, because somebody believed in us enough to speak life into our existence. What you have in your mouth is no small thing. It can blow up for good or it can blow up for bad. There are couples here who have gotten divorced or who are contemplating divorce because every day, all day, you're throwing bombs, sticks of dynamite that is blowing up the relationship. Because of a word said, some of us here have not recovered from what mother said, dad said, uncle said, brother said, sister said, and you still carry that in your mind and say, I'll never forgive you for that. There are folks who haven't spoken to loved ones for years because the blast was too big and the pain was too great. So the Apostle James takes the first 12 verses of his epistle to give the most extensive statement in the Bible on the tongue, or the speech, or the use of words. What you do with your mouth, you will discover, starting today, it is no small thing. He introduces his discussion by saying, let not many of you become teachers, my brethren, talking to Christians, so he's talking to us, knowing that as such we will incur a stricter judgment. A teacher speaks. He speaks with his mouth. There were many in the church who wanted to speak on behalf of God. He says, if you're going to talk on behalf of God, you better watch what you're saying. Because what you say and what God says better be the same thing. Because you will incur a greater judgment. You will have higher accountability because you brought me into the conversation. So if you're going to bring me up, make sure you straighten what you're saying. Because if you want to speak for me, about me, then you better make sure it's true to me. For you will receive the stricter judgment. That leads him to make 3 points that I want to leave with you today from James chapter 3 about the dynamite in your dentures. How powerful is your tongue? What can it do? What can it not do? And why does it even matter? The first thing that he wants you to know is that your mouth has the power to direct the rest of your life. Your mouth has the power to direct the rest of your life. Verse 2, for we all stumble in many ways. If anyone does not stumble in what he says, he is a perfect man, able to bridle the whole body as well. Okay, watch this now. We all stumble, trip up in many ways. There's not a person in here who's not made their share of mistakes, stumble. And we stumble in all kind of ways. We stumble in doing this. We stumble in doing that. We've got this problem. We had this reaction. We did this act of wrong. We stumble in many ways. We're tripping all the time over stuff. We got stuff that we shouldn't have done that we did do, things that we did do that we shouldn't have done. We stumble in many ways. There are a whole lot of issues in this house. All kind, many ways, many failures, many mistakes, many sins. We all stumble. If you've never stumbled, then you're excused from the house. Because he says, we all stumble in many ways. We trip up about things that we have done that are wrong. But having made this broad statement that we all have failures in our lives, stumbles, he says, but to the person who does not stumble in what he says, he is a perfect, that is a mature man, a mature Christian, able to bridle the whole body as well. That's deep. He says you trip over that. Maybe you tripped in handling your money. Maybe you tripped in your relationships. Maybe you tripped on your job. You've tripped in many ways. You're trying to fix this problem in your life, fix this problem in your life, fix that problem in your life. You got all these issues going on in your life because we all stumble in many ways. But then he says, but if I can ever get your tongue right, this one thing, you will be able to deal with all the other things you're tripping over. He says, give me your lips and I'll run your life. Give me your lips, give me your mouth, and you will bridle, bring under control the rest of you. So whatever else is wrong in your life, and the many things that are wrong in my life and your life, he says, just give me one thing, and I'll cover the rest of you. You will be a mature man, a perfect man, he says. Perfect means a mature, an adult Christian who's bringing under control. Look at chapter 1, verse 26. If anyone thinks himself to be righteous and yet does not bridle his tongue, same thing, but deceives his own heart, this man's religion is worthless. He says you can be a worthless Christian. And the proof you're a worthless Christian is you can't control your tongue. So your value to God or your lack of value to God is in your mouth. It's not in your church attendance. It's not in your spiritual activity. He says it's all up in your grill. All up in your mouth. For the man who cannot bridle, bring under control his tongue. He says his religion, going to church, serving, giving, is a waste of time. So a lot of folk waste their time. Because they'll come to church, but they won't control their mouth. Say that I can't use that kind of religion that can't control your tongue. Someone has put it this way. The tongue is a wet place and it can slip easily. He then comes with two illustrations. Verse 3 and 4. Now, if we put bits in the horses' mouths so that they will obey us, we direct their entire body as well. Look at the ships also. Though they are great and are driven by strong winds, are still directed by a very small rudder wherever the inclination of the pilot desires. What's your point? So also the tongue is a small part of the body, and yet it boasts of great things. Now watch this. He says, if you want to get my point, go horseback riding. He says, when you get on a horse, this 1,500-pound beast, you can move it to the left, you can move it to the right, you can steer 1,500 pounds with a little piece of metal in its mouth. Have you ever seen a wild stallion? That's a horse that's not under control. It's not bridled. That's a horse that's going to buck you off. That's a horse that's going to hurt you. That's a horse out of control. But when you put that bit in its mouth and bring it under the control of the one who's riding it, a 100-pound woman can steer a 1,500-pound animal using a small piece of metal in its mouth. And 1,500 pounds will obey a much smaller person because they have control of the bit. God says, like a person riding a horse that has a bit in its mouth and controls 1,500 pounds, while the rest of you is heavier than the 3-inch piece of muscle in your mouth, the 3-inch piece of muscle in your mouth is so powerful that it will turn whatever other weight you have to carry. Watch this now. The horse is out of control. Have you ever been out of control? Have you ever lost it? Have you been out of control with maybe addictions, out of control with your anger, out of control with situations in your life? You have become out of control. That is, you are unbridled. God says, if you ever learn to use the bit in your mouth, if you ever learn to use the dynamite in your dentures, you will be able to steer the rest of you, like a person riding a horse can steer that much bigger beast. We have bigger things going in our lives than this little piece of muscle in our mouth. We got problems. We've got finances. We've got families. We've got work. We got all this big stuff. He says, oh, but if I can get that bit right, then that 1,500 pounds that you are carrying can be steered. It can be brought under your control rather than it controlling you. But you got to learn to watch your mouth. He says, take a cruise ship. Take a big ship. His second illustration. He says, it's being tossed around by the wind. Now, I know a lot of us have been on cruises. They got cruise ships as big as cities. I mean, they got malls on the ship, 3,000, 4,000. One of them has 7,000 people that can get on the ship. They got all kinds of swimming pools, ice skating rinks, movie theaters. This is a floating small city. And when the storm breaks out, comparatively, it's got a little teeny rudder. But that little teeny rudder will steer the ship even though it's subject to the storm. Anybody in here have a storm in your life? Something that's blowing you back and forth, that's whipping you up and down, that's driving you crazy. It is a storm, and you're trying to say, ship, settle down. God is saying, rudder, go to work. You're going to learn through these weeks how to use your rudder. Because he says, if you get the rudder, that is the mouth, the tongue, you get that rudder straight and you can steer the ship of your life even though you're going through the storms of your existence. He says, the power for your life, to direct your life like a horse, has to be directed to where it needs to go, because a wild horse doesn't know where to go. And a ship without a rudder is just subject to whichever way the wind is blowing. You ever feel your life is just the wind being blown? You're just being blown about. Situations, people, circumstance, it's just blowing you. You this way today, that way tomorrow, because you're just being blown about. That's why. It's because you're not yet bridled. And the bit is not being handled, and therefore things are out of control. Stay with me here. Like a runaway horse, it needs to be brought under control. Parents have affected the direction of some of their children because of things they've said that they wish they could take back. Some of us have ruined relationships because of the explosions that came out of our mouths. Because there's dynamite in your dentures. He goes on to the second point. Not only is there power in your mouth to direct your life, there's power in your mouth to do damage to your life. Look at verse 5. So the tongue is a small part of the body, and yet it boasts great things. See how great a forest is set aflame by such a small fire. And the tongue is a fire, the very world of iniquity. The tongue is set among our members as that which defiles the entire body. and sets on fire the course of our lives, and is set on fire by hell. This is some deep stuff. He says, your tongue is a match that starts fires. You see these big fires raging in some of the big parks or some of the big land masses. And you see these big fires, and a lot of times it's discovered that the fire got started by something small, by a little match, a little fire that was unleft addressed, a spark. How could something so little create this much mess? It takes 11 years. It takes 11 years after a forest fire just to get the land prepared to rebuild. It takes decades for the forest to get back to where it was, and all because of spark. Have you ever lit a fire in your life with just a word, a sentence, a phrase, a paragraph? It wasn't even a book. You just said one word, and now we want to get a divorce because one word turned into a forest fire. You forgot what even where the match was because now the whole forest is on fire. Never been in a fight with somebody that you're related to and you don't even know how it got started? All you know is we don't like each other anymore and I'm going to hurt you. You don't even remember, how did we get here? Because of a little match started a forest fire. A little spark created a conflict and a blaze you were not able to put out. Job 19, verse 2, Job says of his friends who were talking to him, he said, your words are ripping me apart. Your words, and these were his friends. These weren't even his enemies. He says, your words are unraveling me, are tearing me apart. He says that the tongue can wipe out a whole bunch of stuff. You know about Mrs. O'Leary's cow? That was October the 8th, 1871, when Mrs. O'Leary's cow in Chicago accidentally knocked over the lantern. The lantern knocked over by Mrs. O'Leary's cow set the barn on fire. The barn on fire spread. That led to the fire of Chicago in 1871, when 100,000 people were homeless, 7,500 buildings were destroyed, 300 people died because a cow knocked over a lantern. That a little lantern ran crazy through a city. You have one black person to say the wrong word to one white person. Or one white person to say the wrong word to one black person. Or one Hispanic person say the wrong word to a policeman. Or the policeman say the wrong word to somebody else. And you can wind up with a race riot because all you got is a match. But now folk are coming from everywhere, all in the streets, and buildings are burning and chaos is erupting, all because of a word, one word, one sentence, one phraseology. And all of a sudden, there's cultural chaos because of the tongue. The president says, we're going to war. That's only one sentence. Oh, but that one sentence can cost lives. Can split families, can bring disaster. It's only a phrase, but there's a lot of dynamite in those dentures. Why can words do all that? Why? Can we start with one little problem and one little phrase cause us not to speak to each other for years? Cause us to downright wind up hating each other, whether it's family or races or whatever it happens to be. How can my mouth do that much damage? He tells you. He said, because Your tongue is a fire, the very world, verse 6, of iniquity. The tongue is set among our members, our body parts, as that which defiles the entire body and sets on fire the course of our life and is set on fire by hell. Okay, let me tell you about hell. Hell is Gehenna. Let me tell you what Gehenna is. Gehenna is the Greek word for the garbage dump outside of Jerusalem. Outside of Jerusalem in biblical days was a garbage dump, and it was called hell. It's called Gehenna. This garbage dump had trash. It was where people took their trash. It was the dump. The way that they would get rid of the trash is by, like folk do today, burning it. So Gehenna, hell, garbage dump, burned 24 hours a day because people were always bringing trash and dumping it in the dump. That's called hell, Gehenna. He says, the reason why your mouth, your speech, your words, your tongue can do so much damage is that it's got the influence of hell helping it. So when you speak, hell is looking for an opportunity to take a spark and create a fire. It's set on fire by hell. And trust me, hell has a lot of fire to go around. Hell got plenty of fire. Hell's got enough fire for every tongue. And so if your tongue is already lit and hell is full of fire, hell is going to loan your tongue some of its fire. So the fire you start with, because your tongue is a fire, hell's going to reach in and dump some fuel on the fire. So now it becomes bigger than you ever imagined and that you started with. So your speech is not just your speech. Your speech is your speech helped by hell. So hell will help your speech. And watch this. It sets in motion the course of your life. Wait a minute now. I thought you were talking about my tongue. I am, and he is. But he's saying there is an attachment of your tongue to the rest of your life. The word course means a wheel, a wheel. So picture the wheel as your life. It's a circular wheel. Inside the wheel are spokes. Spokes are the various parts of your life, like bicycle spokes on a wheel. So the wheel is your life. You've got these spokes coming up in your life that deal with the different elements of your life. Your work life, your family life, your financial life. You've got all these spokes. A wheel turns. You've seen wheels turning in circle with fire coming out of it. And the wheel's going real fast in a circus or something else, and the spokes are coming out. He says that your tongue spins the wheel. The wheel is your life. The spokes in the wheel are the parts of the circle of your life. And he says, when that tongue gets lit and hell throws fuel on the speech, it will send sparks throughout the rest of your life. That's why when one thing goes wrong, it begins to affect other things because it's spinning, but the spokes are attached. And because the spokes are attached to the wheel, when hell gets the wheel going, it can infiltrate all the spokes so that you wonder why this is wrong, that is wrong, this is wrong, because it's attached to the wheel. The wheel is your life. Hell is exacerbating the wheel that have been struck when you lit the match with your tongue. Because see, there's dynamite in your dentures, which is why you gotta watch your mouth. Not only that, but he gives you another illustration, verse 7. For every species of beast and birds, of reptiles and creatures of the sea, is tamed and has been tamed by the human race. But no one can tame the tongue. It is a restless evil and full of deadly poison. He's talking about the damage that the tongue can do. Stay with me because he's going to get deep here in a moment. You've been to the circus And you know what it's like to see tamed animals. It's amazing what men can do with animals. He says, every manner of animal humans tame. See it all the time at the circus. Whoever thought a man could boss a lion around? With the whop, do the whip, lion go jump up and sit down. Lion could tear that man apart, but it's been tamed. Who thought you could tell a tiger what to do? Tiger goes up and sits down or runs around or jumps through hoops because a man tamed it. How you gonna get a bear to ride a bike? You go to the zoo and you got a bear riding a bicycle because you didn't tame that animal and you told it to ride. You got elephants standing over people who put their head on a block. The elephant lifts up his leg, could crush it, but it won't do it because it's under control. It's been tamed. You go to SeaWorld, you got orca the killer whale flipping up out the water, doing flips, jumping through hoops. This multi-ton creature has been tamed. And the ones we can't tame, we incarcerate. It's called the zoo. We done locked them boys up. Because if you ain't gonna let me tame you, I ain't gonna let you out of here. So we either gonna control you if you're around humans, or we gonna tame you. And that's because men have the power to do it. They can tame an animal. But animals will also fake you out. They'll make you think you tame them until the right set of circumstances show up. Like the woman who the other week who's driving through the game park and she decides she wants a little closer look at the lion and she rolls down her window thinking she's safe in her car. That dumb lion wasn't that dumb. A dumb lion was saying, yeah, roll it down. Roll it down now. You go ahead and roll it down because I'm going to show you a little something up in here. You roll it down. She rolls it down and the lion leaps in and tears her apart. He says, you can do this with animals. But he said, let me tell you about the tongue. No man can tame it. No man can tame it. How many times have you tried to tame your kids' tongues? How many times did your mother try to tame your tongue? So here's what we did, because I did it too, so I know what I'm talking about. Here's what we did. They threatened us with a belt. They said, I'll slap you in your mouth. Okay? So fear would grip us, so we would pretend like the lion to tame our tongue. But then we walk off to our room. You blanket, 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 blanket. See, because it wasn't tamed. It just pretended to be tamed until the opportunity. We even talk to other people or talk to ourselves. When the right time, I'm going to tell them what I think. I'm going to tell them what I feel about it. I'm going to tell them. He says, no man can tame the tongue. Why? Because it is full of poison. Romans chapter 3 puts it this way. Romans chapter 3 says this about your tongue and my tongue, because it's been contaminated by sin. He says in verse 13, their throat is an open grave. With their tongues they keep deceiving. The poison of asp is under their lips, whose mouth is full of cursing and bitterness. Mouth is full of cursing and bitterness. I'm going to say something about that in just a moment. But his point here is that this tongue is unruly and it refuses to be tamed. Why does the devil not want you to tame your tongue? Because if he knows you ever stop him from controlling your tongue, he can no longer control the rest of you. See, that's the point. You say, the devil's got me all over here. No, the devil's got the tongue. And you'll see why in a moment. Because he knows if I get your mouth, I got your body, because I got your bit. And whoever owns the bit controls the beast. The beast is your life. I will control the beast if I can control the bit. Give me your mouth and I'll control your addictions. Give me your mouth, I'll control your relationships. Give me your mouth and I will put hell inside of it. Because I'll throw some gasoline on your lips. This leads him to his third point. And the critical point it is. In your mouth is the power to direct your life. In your mouth is the power to do damage to your life and the lives of others. In your mouth is the power to determine life. Verse 9. With it, with our tongues, we bless our Lord and Father, and with it we curse men who have been made in the likeness of God. From the same mouth comes both blessings and cursings. My brethren, these things ought not be this way. Does a fountain send out from the same opening both fresh and bitter water? Can a fig tree, my brethren, fellow Christians, produce olives, or a vine produce figs? Nor can salt water produce fresh. Watch this now. He says, our mouths and our tongues can do what nature can't even do. We can do stuff outside of the natural order of things. You cannot go to a water fountain and out of that one opening get fresh and bitter water. You'll get fresh or bitter water. You can't do that. You can't go to a grapevine and get figs. You can't go to an apple tree and get oranges, because nature doesn't operate that way. You get whatever it was designed to give. That's all. That's the way nature works. He says, but not the tongue. He says the tongue is so unique, it can contradict itself. He says, out of the same mouth comes blessings and cursings. That's going to happen today. It's going to happen today, this morning. Because a lot of the same folk who were praising God, when you get in that car with your family or somebody cuts you off, you're going to lose your religion. Wasn't that sermon good? You blankety blank better get out of my way. You done both at the same time. He says, that's not how nature works. He puts it in biblical language. This ought not be. To put it in everyday language, that ain't right. He says that's a contradiction. That's moving two ways at the same time. He says you bless and curse. Praise God, you son of a gun. I knew you thought what I was going to say. He says you're going in two directions at one time. That's called being double-tongued, like being double-minded. He says, these things ought not to be. Why is it that way? Because hell lights the fuse of the tongue, because hell wants to control the life. So if God ever gets to control the tongue, and we're going to talk about that, just not today. But when God gets control of the tongue, God will have control of the course, the circle. And when God gets control of the circle, some of the things that are wrong will disappear, because he's controlling the bit in the mouth that controls the life and the 1,500-pound beast. He says the trees will produce what trees are designed to produce. Proverbs 18:4 says the words of a man's mouth are as deep waters, because he talks about bitter and sweet water. Proverbs 10 verse 11 says the mouth of a righteous man is a well of life. Why ought it not be this way? Now here's what you don't want to miss. He says, because men are created in the image of God. And one of the sermons is going to be God in your mouth. But he says, because men have been created in the image of God. Now watch this. When God created the world, he didn't wave his hand in the air like he just don't care. When God created the world, he didn't nod. No, when God created the world, he spoke. He said, let there be light. Let the land be separated from the world. All that happened in creation because God was talking. He was using his mouth, not his hands, not his neck, not his head. He was using his mouth. He said, let there be. When God wanted to explain Jesus to us in John 1:1, he said, in the beginning was the Word. And the Word was with God, and the Word was God. In verse 14, and the Word became flesh. When God wanted to describe Jesus, he talked about speech. The Word. So watch this. God's creative genius is in his speech. Okay? Because one of the principles we're going to teach you is how to speak your way to victory. When God wanted to do something big, when God wanted to create something out of nothing, ex nihilo, he started talking. When he wanted to teach Adam how to live his life, he gave Adam his word. Why did God give Adam his word? Because Adam was created in the image of God. And since the image of God includes speech, Adam was given speech, something animals are not given. Because animals don't have the image of God. Only mankind does. And so Adam spoke. Oh, but when Slick showed up in the garden. Oh, Slick. Slick slithered in. He started talking. And he started doing what God did. Why? Because he understood something we don't get. Proverbs 18:21, a scripture we will repeat throughout the series. Proverbs 18:21, life and death is in the power of the tongue. You have the power with your mouth to kill you and other folk. You have the power in your mouth to give life to yourself or other folk. Because you are created and men are created in the image of God. And when God speaks, life came. When the devil spoke, Adam and Eve got put out of the garden and death came. Because the woman told Adam. Adam reacted and told God. And so you got all this talking going on in the garden. The devil is so good that he can make good sounding speech actually be speech out of hell. In Matthew chapter 16, verses 22 and 23, Jesus is on his way to the cross. Peter says, no, not you, Lord. This should not be for you. You shouldn't be going to die in Jerusalem. Jesus told Peter, get thee behind me, Satan. Peter meant well. He wasn't trying to serve hell. But he was trying to do good serving hell and not knowing it. Because you can be well-meaning and be helping hell out all at the same time. How many folks have you talked to and said, I ain't mean that. That's not what I meant. So what we're saying is, that's dynamite in your dentures. Satan wants to control your speech because he wants to control your life. But he says, if I get the bit in your mouth, I'll move the beast of your life. Because life and death has a power. And life and death's power is the tongue. If you and I get this straight, the circle of our lives will change. Two frogs were walking one day, and unbeknownst to them, there was a big ditch that they didn't see, and both frogs fell into the ditch, and it was a deep ditch. So they're at the bottom of this ditch. So they figured, we got to jump out of here. We got to jump out of here because it's dangerous down here if we don't get out. So they do what frogs do. They started jumping. They started jumping. They started jumping because they want to jump out the ditch. But the ditch was too high. They couldn't jump. They couldn't get that high. But they're trying, but they're getting more tired and more tired and more tired and more tired. But they're not making it. Some other frogs came along and saw their friends in the ditch. And it was clear that they weren't going to make it. So all the frogs gathered around to say goodbye to their friends. Hey, y'all. We're so sorry you're in the ditch. There's nothing we can do. We can't get you out of there. It's too far for you to jump out. So we just came to say goodbye. We love you. And just die easy. Just die easy. You give up and die. Don't hurt yourself more. But we just want to let you know we care about you, but die easy. One frog gave up the ghost. He was too exhausted. He just laid down and fell asleep in death. But the second frog kept jumping. They said, all you're doing is killing yourself. Give up. But he refused. This frog just kept jumping, until, to the shock of the frogs up top, he literally leaped out of the hole. So his buddies are trying to figure out, how could this be? First of all, you were tired. You've been jumping all this time. It's so deep. How could you do this? So they went up to the frog, finally out of the hole, and they said to him, how could you do this? The frog looked at the group and said, I'm deaf. The only reason I hear you now is I'm close enough to read your lips. But when I was down in the ditch and saw y'all doing this, I thought y'all were encouraging me to keep jumping. So I just kept jumping. I thought you were telling me to jump. You were waving your hand, telling me to jump. Some of us today are in a ditch. And some of us have got folk in our lives who are telling us don't jump. You need to be deaf to hell and keep your ears open to heaven, because God wants to lift you out of the pit you're in by what you're listening to, because life and death is in the power of the tongue.